This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, I'm Honalee Culpepper, director of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, and you are listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Justin Ozer, and join with me today are my co-hosts, straight from the wild lands of Nepenthe, it's Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shea Matala. So, Chrissy, how are you doing?
I am doing quite well. I have not found any bunny corns to make sausage out of, but other than that, I'll be a wild girl of the woods.
Ah, nice. And Brandon, how are you doing?
Shields up! Sensor scans to max!
Yeah, I love that.
Doing great.
Can't have Riker without shields
up. That was fantastic.
Yeah. All right, so today, we'll be discussing the seventh episode of Picard Nepenthe, and I wanted to point out before we get into general thoughts that this is a bit of a milestone, at least according to Memory Alpha. Nepenthe is the 775th Star Trek production, so that includes episodes and movies. So
wow.
We're well on our way to 800, guys.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah.
So with that exciting bit, let's get into our general thoughts about the episode. So, Chrissy, what did you think of this episode that was the longest of Picard so far, almost an hour?
Yeah, that was a wonderful thing. First, like, my initial, we get done with the episode, and I want at least a season of the Riker Troy family on the Titan. I want to know the story. I want to know about Thaddeus and his languages. I want to know, I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to see the sad part of him dying, but that actually seems like, you know, that's a story to tell as well. So, yeah. Yeah, bring us some Riker Troy story.
Okay, so wanting more. I think that's mm-hmm. always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon, initial thoughts?
There is a lot of really great stuff in this episode, and there's a lot of character moments in this episode, and I really, really love it. But as we'll get to later on, there's one thing in this episode that really upset me, and it is not what anybody's thinking, and it really upset me. So I'm looking forward to talking about it, sort of.
Okay, that'll be interesting to find out once we get to whatever that thing is that we are not anticipating right now.
Yeah, there's no way that, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to completely blindside everybody with this problem that I have. So
that's okay.
Fun.
You've done that in previous episodes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so for me, like, so I watched this episode the first time yesterday on Thursday. And I was like really loving and enjoying what was going on, but I was trying to kind of like get my feeling of it all together. And then I rewatched it today as I was, you know, taking notes for the episode. And I just really love the episode. I mean, the majority of it really has to do with seeing Riker and Troy and their daughter Kestra and Picard there. And those scenes were, I think, some of my favorite things in Star Trek. And we'll see how I feel at the end of the episode of this episode based on what you guys bring up. But like my initial thought after watching it the second time was that I felt this was one of the best Trek episodes I've seen in a long time. And it would probably rank somewhere not far from my top five. I saw a couple of people say this was their favorite thing since the late seasons of DS9. Oh. And I think I'd agree with that. Some people would say like, oh, well, maybe that doesn't say as much if you're not a fan of, you know, Voyager, Enterprise, or Discovery. But I'm a big fan of some stuff in Enterprise, especially the Vulcan arc, which fits into my top 10. And I think this surpassed that, at least on the second viewing. So I loved it, and I'd rate it really highly, at least from this perspective. Again, we'll see how I feel when your concern that is a mystery that is eating at me is brought up later. But anyway, that's my initial thoughts on it. So let's talk about favorite moments. So Chrissy, you have one you want to throw out there?
I love it when Kester was texting under the table. That's just, it's so preteen, early teen thing to do in the modern day. And of course, the technology is going to follow through with that. It's beautiful.
I love that too. And when she was doing that, I was like, do they have like the equivalent of a Google search where you're like, planetary system, two red moons, lots of lightning, and just see what comes up. But no, she was texting this captain apparently. So that was, I've noticed some of your favorite moments or maybe some of the quirkier things that happen in these episodes.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Which is really
cool. It works.
So Brandon, favorite moment?
Okay, so can I ask first that, so since you brought that up as your favorite moment, can I bring up like an issue that I have with that moment? Or should
is
we wait?
Is that the big issue? Or
it's
is
not.
It?
No, oh, okay. It's one small of the little ones here.
Sure.
So, please. I mean, okay, so in this day and age here, so like, okay, Troy is not, Troy and Riker are like not a big fan of this guy, this Captain Crandall.
Yeah.
And you could tell that.
Apparently.
They're like, you know, he's been from Kronos to Typhon's Rift or whatever she said.
Typhon's Rift, yes.
And then Troy says, so he says, right? And then Kestra says something about being broken, and Riker's like, and so is Captain Crandall.
Uh-huh.
Right? So this is a person that they're obviously don't seem to be too fond of. And their, like, underage daughter is texting this dude.
Okay, that's a good point.
Like, I don't know, like, I'm just like, okay, so problematic for me.
I got the feeling that, not that he was just, like, some creepy old man. I got the feeling more that he was just somebody that had maybe, like, a weird philosophy or way of thinking about things, or maybe eccentric, but not that he was dangerous. That's the sense I got.
Oh, and you know what? I'm sure you're right. But you know what? I'm still keeping my daughter away from the texting with the old men for now. You know, like, and I'm sure some of them are just fine. So,
Okay.
Well, we could find that out in the season we're going to get about the you know, Riker Troy story.
Yeah, we can meet Captain Crandall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sure the guy's fine. I am sure the guy is fine. I'm just saying this is still a problematic plot point.
Yes. You know?
Like, I'm sure there's nothing wrong with Captain Crandall. Riker is not always the nicest people to nicest to people. Like, I mean, go to the episode Ensign Row, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, so, like, I'm just saying, in theory, when you look at what's going on here, and there's a couple other things that I've seen in this episode too that I haven't seen online, and that's one of them that I'm like, nobody's like mentioned this. So,
I didn't even go there.
Okay, so now that you've gotten that out of the way, a favorite moment.
So my favorite moment in this episode was the Troy hugging Picard moment.
Mm-hmm.
And when they just pause and they just look at each other, and I can't remember exactly what she said, but she knew he was in trouble, and he just pauses and looks at her and says, I'm fine. You know, and there's so much history. She's reading him. She's sensing everything that's going on in his emotions right now. And it was just such a really beautiful moment. You know, my daughter doesn't watch the credits. And while I will probably address it, I realize that Marina Sirtis wasn't in the credits. Even if she was, she wouldn't have recognized
it. On the opening
it.
Credits, yeah.
But when she showed up on screen, my daughter was like, she inhaled and covered her mouth. She went,
aww.
Like, she was so excited to see her on screen, you know? And, like, I loved it. And it's one of those things where it's like, I wish that we wouldn't have gotten these spoilers, because the way that this opening sequence was set up was beautifully set up for the hardcore fan to pick up the little breadcrumbs that they were laying.
Uh-huh.
And if you didn't, then it was definitely a surprise to see her. And my daughter showed me that. Like, if you knew the name Kestra and where that came from, then you knew what was coming. But if you didn't, it was still a surprise. So, but that moment with just Picard saying, I'm fine, was just beautiful. Hmm. It just summed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my favorite moment, it was, I guess, a different hug. It was more like the group hug with the three of them at the end. That just really moved me, because it was just like a reflection of everything they've been through, what they've kind of been through, and talking things out in the episode, and they just really love each other a lot. So that was my favorite moment among an episode that had a lot of favorite moments, but I really love that part.
It's a good one.
Yeah, so let's dive into the part on the planet of Nepenthe, which has Riker and Troi and their daughter Kestra, and where Picard and Soji have appeared. I know that that's not the first part of the episode, but I wanted to talk about that because that is really the main part of the episode. And there's a lot of different kind of elements that happen. I mean, I feel like we could talk about the different parts of it for, you know, 3 hours or something, but let's just see what we get at and what our thoughts are. So Chrissy, just, I guess, wherever you want to begin with that, because there was a lot of, that was a lot of the episode.
There is a lot.
I mean, even if it's something like, you know, how you felt about Picard meeting Troi and Riker and Kestra and what you thought of that character. And, you know, there was this interaction with Kestra and Soji and all that.
That actress is going places. I've never mm-hmm. seen her in anything Kestra. Else. Yeah. Yeah. That she's wonderful. Mm-hmm. My first thought was she reminded me of, I can't remember her name, the girl in Jurassic Park, the original one.
Yeah.
So many years ago. But yeah, I loved that you have this primitive looking log cabin, or seemingly primitive, but it's got all the voice controls, just like a starship and everything else. You mm-hmm. know, as a log cabin, I wrote down a log cabin that is set up with shields and perimeter scans.
Yeah.
Since mm-hmm. you wouldn't expect that. And I love that he was cooking, because that was a nice little nod back to, I can't remember which episode it is in season two with the eggs.
I'm guessing his pizza is better than his scrambled eggs, which everybody but Worf hated, right? Mm-hmm. He's improved in the intervening decades, apparently.
I still say that was the eggs, not him.
Did we see Riker cook a lot? Because I know we saw Sisko cook a ton.
With the Owan eggs and mm-hmm.
I
Enterprise.
I think it was just... That's right, yeah. And these are the voyages where he's cooking yeah. his chef in the holodeck. Yeah. But mainly the eggs in TNG. But like, yeah, there were all these great touches of just like their kind of family life and mm-hmm. making food. I mean, it was all these things that I think I've seen some people say, well, those things move slowly. It's like, I don't care. I love that you're just seeing their lives, and Picard happens to be coming by and it's like, hey, let's talk about this while we make some pizza. I just thought that it was just like such an kind of ordinary moment, but it made it extraordinary because of the people that were there and what they were talking about.
Well, you know? They've known yeah. each other for 35 years. So like yeah. they're friendly with each other. Right. So, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with them, with him being busy and while they were talking and like,
oh, no, doing exposition. I didn't have a problem with happen, it. I loved right? it.
Yeah. So the first point I want to make is, I think the biggest mistake of this episode was that there was B plot. Like, honestly, I think this episode should have been on the planet Nepenthe and that is it. And then the next episode should have started with everything else going on. Honestly, like this, that's what I would have loved to have seen. And I think this episode would have been absolutely perfect if they'd done that.
I can see that.
That's interesting, because I thought that they actually weaved in the different parts that were going on, which we'll talk about later. I thought they weaved those in well, and I didn't time it or anything, but I think about 3/4 of the episode is on the planet of Nepenthe, yeah. and the other quarter,
the majority is Nepenthe, and there's just a little bit that's the other two stories that are going on, you know. So I don't know, like, to me that just would have been like such a sweet spot, that would have been like such a present to the fandom. I just think it would have been just, I think that would have been spot on if they had just done this as one episode.
That's interesting, because I didn't feel like it took away, and it was enough of the episode that took place on Nepenthe that I didn't mind. And
yeah. You know.
But like, so we've talked about it a little bit, but let's talk about Kestra more. Of course, we should acknowledge that the name comes from Deanna's sister, who died when she was young, which we see in the TNG episode Dark Page, which is one that I really love. And I just kind of like that this is a character that I don't even know how to describe it, but Kestra is just kind of like full of life and curiosity. And, you know, she's meeting this person who's an android and she just wants to know all kinds of things, mm-hmm. but then like a good way. And she wants to make sure this person is okay. But she just has, I don't know, felt like such a three-dimensional character and so much personality that I really loved it. I don't know if I would go this far, but I saw Keith DeCandido, who does reviews on tour.com, say that Kestra is like his favorite character in Star Trek now. I mean, there's something really charming about this character. So let's talk about it, you know, a little bit more. So, you know, what do What do we feel it adds? I mean, how would the episode have been different if it was just Riker and Troy and, you know, they didn't have a daughter there? Like, would that have really changed a lot of things?
I think it really just adds a back history to them. Like, one of the things that I was going to say about Kester is, like, I love the actress. She's fantastic. I love the dialogue. The dialogue is fantastic. But for me, like, as a father of three kids, the dialogue was a little bit... seemed to be coming from like a little bit of a younger person. You know, like there was nothing wrong with what she was saying. Everything she was saying is like what a young kid would be saying. But the actress to me seemed to be a little bit older than the dialogue that was coming out of her.
How old do you think the actress is?
So I'm guessing she's probably about 13.
14, I think.
14, okay. And like to me, the dialogue coming out of her is like, 7 or 8 year old, right? You know, like when she's like, I could shoot you, but I'm a pacifist. Like that's coming from a young kid who's just learned what a pacifist means, right? You know, it's spot on writing. It's really spot on writing, but it just, that kind of a sentence comes from somebody a little bit younger, in my opinion, right? As a person with three young girls, it's, you know, just, that's my point of view on it. It doesn't take anything away. It just, she just seemed a little bit too old. That's all. But also, a lot of the exposition that she's giving to Soji when she's on the bunk bed felt to me like that should be dialogue that was coming from Troy at some point.
Really?
You know, like as a young kid, she just seemed to know a little bit too much details about Data. So to me,
I think that she's heard a lot of stories.
I'm sure that she has, but some of the stuff that she said just seemed like it should have been coming from Troy. Like when she starts talking about why would Data build an android with mucus, you know, about how Data's always striving to be more emotional and be more human and do these things. Like that's not information that would be coming from this person who's never known Data.
Are you sure? Because it seems like it's information that would come based on the stories that she's heard, and she's just excited to like share this and ask questions. It worked for me.
I came at that from a different direction.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. First watch, I got the impression that Data is a mythical figure almost to Kestra. She has been told these stories, you know, by her parents, and he is this soaring figure that, you know, mythical is the best word I come up with. The second time I watched it, I realized why. If Data had still been around, her brother's life would have been saved.
Yeah.
So I think we have a bit of hero worship, and I think we also have a bit of what if there. And so it would be natural that she would soak up as much information as she possibly could about this person.
Yeah, and I just saw it as just like natural curiosity. Like I've heard so much about this great android Data, and here's one. So I have lots of questions that I've thought about ever since I first heard about Data, and just like wondering, like, you're different. How are you different? Why are you different? What's going on? It just, I actually really love kind of the curiosity. And I think if that was coming from Troy, it would feel, I don't know, to me, that would feel a little bit odd. Like she would need to ask those questions. She would just kind of understand, okay, this is something that's different and they were built differently, but I don't know. I hadn't thought it would have made sense from anyone else.
Yeah. Just listening to it, I don't know, just maybe next time you watch it, just take a listen to that. It just felt a little bit out of place coming out of Kestra. And, you know, like, again, nothing wrong with the dialogue. It just felt like that should have come from Troy as well. That's all. So,
okay. Well, let's talk about Riker and Troy. So,
actually, I mean, how about if I can feed the conversation, like, since she just brought it up, can we talk about the Mendaxian neurosclerosis?
Yeah, so that's the disease that killed Thad, who was the son of Riker and Troy, yeah.
Yes, so for the Mendaxian neurosclerosis, which is the disease that Thad had, so there's been stuff going around on the internet right now about this particular thing, and this is one of the things that I had a problem with. This is still not the big thing that I had a problem with. I don't have a problem that this kid has died. I had a problem that this kid has died because of the plot elements that are going on in this season. So this this was pretty frustrating for me, because to me, this silicon-based virus where you cure it by culturing the infected cells in an active positronic matrix is completely ridiculous to me that this is tied in this way, because Data wasn't around for a long time. And if I remember correctly, Data is the only positronic type android, right? Soon type androids are the only positronic, and you can't replicate positronic type brains. Like, that's the problem that they've had. Okay. So they, and it's something that they've never been able to do. So, you know, with B4 dying, with Lore dying, with Juliana Tainer dying, with all these people dying and them never being able to replicate Data properly, like, positronic brains haven't really been replicated and reproduced. So Data was dead before this kid even came around.
Yes. However, what Maddox has done with Daj and Soji is using an element of Data. So I would think that there would be that some kind of positronic element. And if they hadn't had that ban in place, Maddox would have developed something like that sooner.
Right. So, but again, the fact that they put it that this kid died because of this is, to me, is kind of ridiculous. Like, putting it in another perspective, let's say next episode, which I fully predict we're going to see like Worf and LaForge very soon, right? Because of that thing. Let's pretend we just see, let's pretend we see LaForge next episode. And you know what? He's blind. His eyes no longer work. You know what? And his eyes no longer work because something magical data. Let's pretend all of a sudden Worf can't walk anymore because his spine has disintegrated, because whatever that doctor's name is that I can't remember, the writers decided to retcon something and they invented something for Data, magical Data spine, and Worf can no longer walk. That would be ridiculous. So to me, to have this kid brought in and died is fine, because tragic things happen to people. I'm frustrated that they tied it into this major plot, because I don't think that this is going to play out in any way for the rest of the season. I really don't think we're going to see Riker and Troi again. Okay. So like, the fact that they've just thrown that in as, oh, this is really how bad the situation is. Not only could we not save the Romulans, but we couldn't save the Riker's children either. I don't know. This is still not the thing that really upset me in this episode. Okay.
Interesting. So like, you know, this thing happened in this episode, and sorry, it's happening like it does some episodes. I feel completely the opposite way. It completely worked for me to show the impact of this synthetic ban. So, you know, I don't think it's that ridiculous that there might be some kind of connection or some wider consequences to this thing. And it's not like the first time that we've heard of a silicon-based virus or anything like that. So, I don't know. It worked for me. Mm-hmm. But what did you think about it, Chrissy?
I had different problems with it. Related, but different. In and of itself, again, fine. That works as a plot point. He could have been in a shuttle that blew up, but whatever. Right. Okay. So the silicon-based virus thing, I know nothing about medicine. I know virtually nothing about biology. So I don't even know if that's something that could affect a carbon-based life form. Start there. Okay. And then second, how is it that there's this disease that's easily curable, but again, only with Soong type android stuff?
Yeah.
So I did catch that, and it was kind of more along the lines of not magic data, but who would have thought to take a virus and do a culture in a positronic brain or positronic matrix? It doesn't make any sense from that standpoint either, unless somehow that's where it came from, which that would be
we don't know much about
thing.
The origin, but you have even a reference to a silicon-based virus. I think it's an observer effect in Enterprise. Okay. And I mean, I think the relationship is, I'm guessing, that the positronic brain is, or positronic matrix has some silicon components to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, they didn't have to explain like exactly how that would happen or what the connection. For me, it was about, you know, the impact of this ban affecting these people personally that we really love. So it worked for me, because I didn't really need like a lot of explanation. It didn't feel ridiculous. It happened and I was like, that's a really sad thing that's happened. So
I think it would have been more interesting if Thad had died on the Mars attack.
Yes.
So, like, he could still die as a result of what's going on here.
Yeah, but then you'd have to explain why the heck he would be, like, on Mars.
The Titan was there getting an upgrade. Bang. That's way easier to believe than magic silicon data brain juice.
Utopia Planitia.
Yeah, but then why does he die and the other people, like the Riker and Troy, don't? And I don't know. To me, that feels like that needs more backstory. Then he got an illness and died.
Okay. He was going to the Mars Cedar Point with his friends.
See, that to me, that would have felt contrived because there's been so much that's related specifically to the Mars attack, especially in the early episodes. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Now, I'm going to add, I'm going to add after this here, I really love this episode.
Do you? Okay?
Like, I know, that's what you said.
I really love this episode, okay?
But tell us more about what you love about it, because I feel like you focused a little bit on the things that you have issues with. So tell me, what did you love about seeing Riker and Troy?
Okay, this episode, okay, I am not the biggest Troy fan, but Troy stole the show.
Oh, yeah.
Marina Sirtis stole the show in this. Every scene she was in, she was the center of attention, and she was so beautiful. She was so amazing. Her acting, the pain I could see in her from losing this child was just absolutely brilliant. When she calls out Picard for his nonsense comment to Soji, like, bravo. I, like, applauded my television. Okay? Like, she's standing her ground and she's being firm. When Troy is this person, when we see her on screen and she's doing this stuff, she is such an amazing character. And it's like, she's a tough character to utilize in the show. I mean, look at the first season. She's gone for half of it. Right? In the first season of Next Generation, because they didn't know what to do with her. But when they got her, oh my goodness, did they got her. And she was firing on all cylinders in this episode. Give her the Emmy now.
Yeah.
All right. No, it was amazing. I am actually a pretty big fan of Troy, but don't think they always utilized her well. But I think she has more good episodes than people give her credit for. But, like, yeah, when that character is being utilized well, she can say things and do it in such a way that it feels like no one else can.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, Picard was coming by and, you know, almost giving this, like, sarcastic response to Soji's, you know, fears that, like, she was being manipulated again. And she was like, you know, maybe a ship's counselor isn't supposed to say this, but you had that coming when she, you know, Soji pushed him out of the way. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it continues the theme that we've been talking about for a lot of this season, where people are telling Picard, it's almost like Picard is in a position now where people can tell him what they really think about some of the actions he's taking. Whereas before, maybe when he was a captain or an admiral, it would be different. Not that there's a lot of times that you see him making bad decisions, but there were some times where it felt like, you know, he felt like he could solve any situation and do anything. But now he's in a different position. And yeah, I really like that she was calling him on that. So
Riker did too.
And Riker did as well.
Yeah. And I actually, at that point, I kind of thought to myself, okay, so every episode we're going to have somebody telling him off and telling him he's arrogant, which is kind of, it's getting a little bit much, but it's different coming from Riker. Episode,
but it's happened a good deal, maybe because it's just obvious to people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know? And he's not in a position of authority, so they can tell him off.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes.
Yeah, well, but the interesting thing about this episode is people have been telling him off a lot, but I felt like Picard in places showed a little bit more humility, because Riker was telling him, you know, that, and I'll read some of it. Now, I know why you wanted to keep it a secret, it being, you know, the whole mission that he's on and what's going on. Classic Picard arrogance. You get to make the decisions about who gets to take the chances and who doesn't, who's in the loop and who's out of the loop, and naturally it always ends up with you. That's fine on the bridge of your starship, Captain, but now you're dealing with a teenager, more or less. That can be an extremely humbling experience. Frankly, I'm not sure you're up to it. And after a little pause, Picard says, perhaps I'm not. And Riker says, there you go, baby steps. Like, there are moments in this episode where Picard is a little bit more humble and he's like, you know what, guys? I've heard it for a while. Maybe you're right about what's going on here. So I saw, like, little kind of glimmers of that in this episode, which I thought was really great. And maybe it was kind of Riker and Troy that can get him to that place where he can start to understand, like, okay, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. And that's part of like the genesis of like this whole episode. Like, you know, he jumps through the spatial trajectory with Soji and it's like, the plan I had kind of ended here. So what now? And like the bulk of the episode is, and that's what I loved about it. It was like this pause in the action where it's like all this crazy stuff is happening, but let's take a pause and let's try to assess what's going on because it seems like it's a couple of days or something like that. So, and Soji gets to kind of figure out who she is, what's going on. And what I really like is that she gets to kind of decide in the end, yes, this is what I want to do. And she's been totally manipulated by so many people. And this pause kind of gives her the opportunity to say, yes, I want to find that home. So I thought like the way it was structured and like the kind of unfurling of like the different conversations and getting toward the point of what happens next, I thought was beautiful. And it was just very well done to get to that point. And for Picard to, and Soji, in fact, to really reflect on things.
Okay. So, but go back to that line that you said there. Like, when is what Riker's describing? When have we seen that before? So, like, go through your thing about when he's talking about his arrogance and stuff.
What, you want me to read some of that?
Yeah, again? Start reading that again.
Okay. So it starts with, now I know why you wanted to keep it a secret. Classic Picard arrogance. You get to make the decisions about who gets to take the chances and who doesn't.
Pause.
And who's in the loop.
Okay, pause there. Okay, yeah. You get to make the decisions. Picard didn't really make those decisions. Riker was always the one that was going on the away missions. Riker was always the one that was in danger.
Not exactly, because they would have these meetings in the observation lounge and he'd be like, what are the options? And then Picard would make the decision. Okay, uh-huh. Here's where we're going forward with.
But that's not arrogance. He's the captain.
Justice.
Think about something like the episode Justice. Yeah.
Talk to me, Chrissy.
Well, I just he almost unilaterally decides that Wesley is worth more than maintaining this culture.
And that's why that episode is so underrated.
Oh, it's an excellent episode. Yes,
that episode is a fantastic episode that people write off because
really
of
good
the,
besides the skimpy outfits.
Yes,
yeah, I think that's serious Gene Roddenberry in there. He's like, let's get people as least clothed as possible, but mm-hmm. But yeah, Justice, what else comes to mind? Insurrection.
See, but like Insurrection, the Admiralty is doing wrong in there, right? So like he's defending a right.
But arguably the Admiralty did wrong in this instance as well. I know you don't think so, but that's part of the idea.
It's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and in Insurrection, it's not like he made the decision of who doesn't get to do it. He was doing an illegal thing and was choosing not to make these other people do illegal things, and they all volunteered, right? So
right, but he chose in the first place to not talk to them about it.
Because he was doing something illegal.
Deciding that he was going to take it upon himself. Mm-hmm. Well, Riker didn't say, you've only made this choice when you're doing legal things.
He didn't, yeah.
Gods, I'm sure I'll think of a half a dozen more.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there are more examples, or it's also been, you know, 20 years since they've served on a ship together, and maybe Riker isn't quite recalling it correctly for the point that he's making. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think what he's saying is that it's, I don't know, like there are certain things where you have the authority and you can do what you want when you're on the bridge of a starship, but now you're dealing with someone who's been really traumatized and you can't just take it upon yourself to kind of make those decisions or push it one way or another, mm-hmm. you know?
And one other possibility just occurred to me. Might that be not quite sarcasm? That Riker understands that that's how Picard's perceived? And so when he says that, oh, classic Picard arrogance, you know, no, it didn't strike me as that way at first either, but talking about it, I said, oh, maybe he's just kind of.
No, he was making a point where he's like,
I realize that.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't think it was sarcastic. I think he's trying to make a point. It was seemed to be written that way too.
Okay. other things about, Riker and Troy. I mean, I think we could talk a lot about the kinds of things they talk about, but other things.
Well, one thing that happened on the planet that I wanted to address that was a really fascinating line from Picard uh-huh. is when he and Riker are going for that walk near the end, and he's talking about his crew, and he's like, they seem to be carrying a lot more baggage than all of you did. Right? And it's like, and I mean, like, that sums up this show so well, because like these people are people who have real life issues, which didn't always seem to crop up in such frequency on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. It almost felt like Patrick Stewart talking to Jonathan Frakes, like, in this show, this crew's going to have some more baggage. So, you know, you should know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's that was pretty interesting. I don't know. I just love just seeing them talk to each other. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how many conversations they had, but they had like just a whole series of conversations that, I don't know. I just thought it was really great just seeing them talk. And I could have heard them talk for, you know, 2 hours on all this stuff.
Yeah. So. I could have as well. I mean, like, I totally would have loved to see more. What do I say every episode? I love the human moments. And like, this is so human of them talking. She's like, look, your guys are welcome here. Like these, like, even after he's like, shields up, you've disrupted our lives. Stay as long as you need, 'cause we can handle it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they're there for him. Like, they trust Picard implicitly, right? These are people that have worked with him for an extremely long period of time. They know him for a very long period of time, even longer than they've worked with him. You know, like, it's just, it's really, it was really beautiful to see them all together again. I don't know if it was intentional or not. I know that I made the joke before, but I mean, like, I seriously did get the Nexus vibes off of this, but I mean, and I think that's intentional with this cabin and whatnot, right? Because they are calling back to a lot of things that you're kind of supposed to be thinking of, you know, in this show. At least this is the nostalgia that I'm getting from this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I wanted to ask, is why can't Troy read Soji?
Why can't she read Soji? I would think it's because she's been activated, and maybe there is something more about her consciousness at this point that she can't read, just like she couldn't read Data.
But as soon as Data got an emotion chip, she could read him.
She could read the emotions coming off of him, right? And Troy can say, like, well, I can see, like, what the emotions are, but I can't quite read anything else.
Right.
Let's not confuse her skill as a psychologist versus her empathy.
Mm-hmm.
To me.
Yeah.
Data.
So Troy could read Data's emotions, right? She could read him when he had an emotion chip. She could read Lol. Right? Like, she could sense off Lol. And she's, and like, Troy's whole monologue there, she's like, she appears to be agitated. She appears to, I didn't write the whole thing down, but she's like, but I can't read her.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Just saying she can't read her says to me specifically, sort of psychically, okay? As opposed to, she has been trained in psychology to read how people are reacting.
Yes.
Okay, so it's just taking it two different ways. So I'm taking it as her ability to sense people's emotions in a psychic betazoid manner is not there. But when Data had his emotion chip. Right.
Let me just read basically what she said. So she's saying that Soji appears fully human, clearly expresses emotion, seems traumatized, but I sense nothing. I can't read her. Yeah. So she's saying, like, the appearance on the outside is human. It's clear she's expressing emotions, just like, I don't need to, like, have empathy or read your mind to know your emotions sometimes based on what you're doing, right? The behavior that you have on the outside. And that she seems traumatized. You could tell that from what's on the outside, but she can't sense anything or read her. I take that to mean, like, I can see, like, the outward manifestations of emotions, but I can't use my empathy to, in a way, like, peer inside her head to see what's really going on.
Right.
She can't read anything from that.
Right. Which is what I'm asking. Why can't she? This Soji is clearly emoting. Why can't she sense that?
She can't sense, like, what is going on inside of her head, but she can sense what she can see, the physical manifestation
of it,
which is different.
That's right.
Which is different, right? You could be expressing one emotion, but inside your head, you're thinking something different. So she can't access that other level.
I think I don't understand why
she can't. It doesn't make sense to me that she can't do that. It doesn't make sense that she cannot do her empathetic Beta Z ability on Soji, because Soji is clearly next level android, way beyond
Lol. She is, but there is something that's android within there. And I don't know. I'd have to go back to the Offspring to see if if Troy could really like read what was going on inside Lal's head, as opposed to like seeing the emotions coming off of her.
She said in the offspring, she says, I think it was fear. She's like, I felt fear from her. She felt something.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. And she felt Data's anger in Descent. Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, like, so, like, just those two instances there, it's not because Data was an android, she couldn't sense anything. Mm-hmm. It's because he, quote unquote, didn't have emotions. But as soon as he got emotions, she could telepathically sense them. She could Betazoid sense them. Right. As soon as Lal was expressing, as soon as that connection happened in her android brain, Troy could sense it. And this is well beyond that. So, I don't know.
Okay. It's a good question. Again, you think of these things that I don't think of at all during the episode.
That didn't occur to me. I just did a quick Google here, but I don't recall if they ever brought that up with Julietta Tanner.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I'm like, I can't 100% remember.
I don't remember. So, I don't know if they ever really had an interaction. Yeah.
I'm still upset that Geordi couldn't tell she was an android, because when Geordi looked at Data way back in that Klingon episode in season one, he had like this mystical aura about him because he was a Soontike android, and he never saw that from Julianna Taylor. But I digress.
Because Julianna's just that next level.
Or maybe he did and didn't want to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so, I don't know, I'm probably looking too much into this one here, okay, but if they're telling the story and they're wanting us to believe that these people are, like, next level bad, Romulans chasing after them, Picard has led the bad guys to this planet, and, like, if these people are as bad as they're supposed to be, should Riker and Troy and Kestra be dead in the next episode because of this? Because if you look at things like Star Wars, where, you know, they're following the droids, they're following the good guys and whatnot, and they're just destroying everything in their path because they're the bad guys, and Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are, like, disintegrated on the farm just because they're looking for some androids and stuff like this, right? I'm not saying this is Star Wars, but I'm like, right. Picard has led the bad guys to this planet.
Only if they figure out.
If they're able to really track it, which Narek is trying to do. We'll get to that part of the episode. Yeah. But I think Picard just trusts that Rios can throw them off the scent and get there without leading them there.
I do not think they're going to be doing that. Okay, this is not a prediction. I do not think they're going to be killing them.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
But I mean, like, even Riker himself brought this up, where he's like, look, if only ignorance of what was... Oh, man, I can't read my writing. I'm sorry, guys. Right. If only ignorance of... whatever was coming could keep us safe, keep the people that we love safe. I'm sorry I had to handwrite my notes this week, listeners. Plus Troy, you know, when she's like, look, you can stay here, man, but if I lose my Kestra, like, I don't think I can handle that, right? So, like, they called it out twice here, right? Like, they know that they are in
some danger to it.
Yeah. So, I don't think they're not going to do that. Like, that would be bonkers if they did, but...
Yeah,
I just had this thought, like, if this was a different show, you know, it could be like at the end, like Riker and Troy and Kestra get like gunned down at the very end, but this is not that kind of show at all. So,
no.
Anything else on Riker, Troy? Because I want to talk about Soji a bit next.
Just a couple of, are we going to talk about Thad at all more?
Thad R.R. Martin. Thad.
Okay, well, before we talk about that, I just want to bring up one thing that I noticed a few people talking about online that didn't even occur to me until I saw them talking about it. People seem to be bothered by the dead rabbit and the idea that they're eating
the bunnicorn
actual meat as opposed to replicated anything. And I just... You know, that didn't bother me at all. I did think it was funny because we do get the line from Riker about how we don't enslave animals for food anymore, which is way back in the first season. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're talking about a natural environment. She's hunting, you know, like people do. And I grew up in a hunting culture, so it didn't even blink an eye at that.
Nope. Yeah.
So I just thought it was interesting. I understand why people might be bothered by it, but
yeah, I can see that. Well, and I don't know if I mentioned here before, but I'm a vegetarian.
Oh, yes.
I don't eat meat.
You've told us.
Yes, you have.
I've said that. Okay. But then I watched that and I was like, yeah, that's kind of what they do on this planet. You know, like, I mean, I think Riker in that line in the first season was talking about maybe what Starfleet or the Federation generally does, right? But I don't even know where this planet is.
Factory if it's outside farming.
The Federation or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, okay.
I wanted to bring it up because I know some people, I saw some people on Twitter talking about it, and I don't know that they are listeners. So I'm acknowledging it.
There's a big, we're aware there's a big movement out there right now that people are like, go vegan and stuff. But I mean, like, there's still hunting cultures on Earth. There's still people that hunt for food on Earth, right? And that will not change.
Yeah. And O'Brien did talk about how his mother handled real meat because it grossed Keiko out. So it's not completely gone, but.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I just wanted a couple other things about Thad. First of all, this was the first time in the 21st century era that we hear any negative aspect about children growing up on a starship. That he was unhappy growing up on a starship. Because all the other children we see are perfectly happy to be out in space and they don't feel weird about it. We get a little bit of that from the whole boomer thing in Enterprise. So that's why I specified 21st century. But
well, I don't know if he's unhappy. It was more that he was just looking for something else to connect to. But
okay,
I could see that, I guess.
Well, yeah. Let's just say it's a not 100% positive aspect then. And that brings us to his languages. And I found a couple of cool things, and I just wanted to bring them up. First of all, none of the one of the words is an actual word. The other ones are derivations, and one of them is a complete nonsense word, unless I miss something. So let's start in the order we get them. Vivine, okay, the wild girls of the woods. There is a Latin word, a Latin surname, Vivanus, and that is derived from the Latin word vivus, which means alive. So there's
Hold on.
Wait.
Chrissy's History Corner.
Oh, well, I got other stuff for that later. Okay. All right.
I got stuff for that later.
Sorry. Part this one. Is Chrissy's Linguistics Corner, I guess.
Chrissy's Linguistics Corner.
Yeah. Wait, there's one more thing about Vivine, though.
Yeah.
Because I was looking it up and I was curious. And I guess it can be a name in Cornwall.
Yeah. That's why I found a Cornish surname derived from the Latin surname. Yeah, so vivus or vivus, if you pronounce it like the Romans would have. There was no V in Rome.
Yeah.
There's the history corner. Caesar actually said weenie weenie weechi, so that's funnier.
And did he also say wascoey wabbits?
I'm sure he did. especially if they were painting themselves blue in England.
Wascoey wunny coins?
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Palpla, the language of the butterflies, is a complete... I don't know where that came from. Somebody just made it up. The first thing that comes up in a Google search is Memory Alpha. The planet Ardani, meaning home. I was expecting to find some Greek or Latin there, and I didn't, except for the fact that there are two towns in Greece that are called Ardani. And there is, and this was the funny part, because this was the first thing that came up on Google. There's a costume company that specializes in elf costumes.
No.
And ears. So I think that's I'm sure they didn't know about that, but it's so, you know.
You know, it's so close also to Ardana, which is, that's from the Cloudminders, right?
Yeah. Then the last one, Harpanthi. This, I think, was the weirdest connection if they intended this. Harpanthi is plural for Latin Harpanthus, which is a leafy plant in the liverwort family. I know nothing about botany, so we'll stop there, except for the fact that the Encyclopedia Britannica online says that the liverwort plant is a spore-producing plant.
Mm.
So, Discovery deep cut, maybe. Maybe.
That would be interesting.
I honestly was...
Spell it, though? Because wasn't that word spelled with, like, a G? Like, if you look at the subtitles, it was spelt weird?
Harpanthi?
Is that that's the system?
No. That's different than the system.
That was the language of the mind witches of the Seven Ice, that Thad made up. So
okay, yeah.
So I was expecting a little more like with those, but I loved that it wasn't, that it was just out of the imagination for some of them, and I don't have that kind of imagination, so I love it. So cool.
No, that's great. And I just love that he was just like constructing these entire languages and worlds, and you know, they had like the little drawings on the wall that Troy was looking at, and he just like sketched out all this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like he's making his own mythology. I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of pulls in with the idea of the ex-Borg needing their own culture and mythology. And it's not mythology, it's the news and all of that. So. Yeah.
That R.R. Martin.
Okay, yep, exactly.
Got an 8-book miniseries, right? So,
yeah. All right, that's I'm done with that then.
Okay. Should we talk about Soji a little bit?
I was disappointed that when Kestra turned and said, "You're an android," that she didn't just activate right then and snap both her necks.
Oh,
like, she's already been activated before. But wow.
Sorry, I'm done.
Yeah.
Why did he let that slip and let her tell him that? Because she didn't realize that. I'm like, this is just more of like Picard's stupidity that's going on in this show right now. Like, what?
Yeah, he was like thinking about like, oh, you've asked about the father. I mean, and I thought he was going to start talking about Maddox or something.
So did
but
I.
Then he started talking about Data. So yeah, sometimes in this series, Picard doesn't have the best way of breaking things to people.
No.
But yeah, so. You know, Soji does find out. I mean, she knew there was something going on with false memories or stuff that was only 3 years old, but she's really finding out that she's an android. And of course, you know, she has a really hard time taking this. She has a really hard time trusting anyone to the point where, you know, she says to Troy, like, you're being really sensitive and caring, and that makes me trust you less because I had someone like Narek who was trying to do that as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting for Soji, they were almost saying like she was a little too trusting before, and that was like a flaw in her programming.
Why is that a flaw?
Interesting. Because you can be taken advantage of if you're too trusting.
Oh, well, I don't know. That's just being Canadian.
It's a flaw.
Uh-oh, there's a flaw in Brandon's programming. We need to fix it.
I don't. That didn't seem to be a flaw to me. Like, that is a wonderful human trait, and I mean, like, I don't know, like, my point of view on life is I do my best going with people, just assuming that people have the best intentions. Like, they may do something, they may slip up, they may say something wrong. In my perspective, generally, you know, when people do that, they're not intentionally doing it, right? I mean, like, other people, I'm certain, have other experiences than me, okay? But I tend to look and assume positive intent on most people out there, okay? So you can tell me that's because I'm a white male. Right. But, you know, that's just the way that I go through life. So to me, trust is a good thing to have. You know, we have to trust each other.
It is. And it wasn't the white male thing why I'm sitting here laughing. I was laughing quietly, listeners. One, you're not a cynic. So that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Two, I have to ask, have you ever worked food service or retail?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Most people who have worked that I know who have worked food service or retail just assume that everybody they run into is going to be a jerk until they're proven otherwise.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Like, good for you that you did not get that.
No. Like, I was in retail for a long time and I got out of it because of the attitudes that generally customers have, right? And like the things that they were requesting were like ridiculous sometimes, right? But I'd been in it for a long time, but I really loved customer service. I was very good at it and I really enjoyed what I did, but I had enough by the time I left. But yeah, I come from a customer service background and I generally think that most people have good intentions, right? And they may not communicate themselves the best, but that's just, I'm content to go through life like that and I'm happy.
You're not a cynic and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Are you saying you are?
Oh, God's yes.
Okay. All right. Because like, it's interesting because I think I kind of fall somewhere in the middle between you guys, because I do think that a lot of people do have good intentions. And I do tend to think positively until I can see otherwise, but I am always wary about people potentially taking advantage of your good intentions and using and manipulating you for their own gain, because there are people out there like that.
Yes,
so I
absolutely
tend to like have to think well of people, but also be a little wary and guarded at first. So
reasonable,
maybe somewhere in the middle.
I mean, like, I tweeted this out, like, in my personal life, like, I work for a company and we just suffered a malicious ransomware attack at my company and I'm now unemployed for a couple of weeks, laid off. Right. And I'm sitting there in my office talking with people and I'm like, I am mind boggled that somebody could do this to somebody else. right? Like I am just absolutely, I could never do something like that to somebody else. I'm just mind boggled. There are people out there that definitely take advantage of people. I'm not saying that's not true. And you just have to be careful, right? Yeah. But I mean, like, I will trust you until you give me a reason not to trust you. And I mean, I guess somebody's not trying to kill me after they take my memories, right?
Yeah. But I mean, except Soji missed some cues where Narek was really, like, manipulating her and she shouldn't have trusted him past a certain point.
Yeah, there was definite signs there, right? But again, she's also 36 months old. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And doesn't quite have all that experience. But I mean, I was just surprised to hear that from Troy. That line, because Troy's a good-hearted person, and I think Troy looks for the best in people as well. So
she does, but she's been someone who's been taken advantage of as well in the past.
Yeah, once or twice, or a thousand times, you know.
A few times, yeah. But I thought it was really interesting. Like, we've seen Soji, she's been on the cube, and she's falling in love with Narek and trying to figure out kind of to do this work with the XBs and try to fit. But now we're to the point where it's like, okay, I know who I am. What do I want to do with my life? And I thought it was interesting over the course of the episode, her like having this kind of gradual trusting, I think that she gets to by the end where she's like, okay, I'm ready to trust and let's go and find my home. So I thought that was a really nice journey that she had in this episode. I'm kind of looking forward to where that kind of goes going forward. So I really enjoyed that aspect. I mean, I thought, you know, having Soji and Kestra, like having this interaction was great. And then Riker, Troy and Picard. I mean, I just thought like all those interactions were just really working for me. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I loved it. Man, I wish this was just, I wish that was all that we saw was just what was going on in Nepenthe. That would have just been a wonderful slice of cake. It would have been great. So, as much as I like
that you don't have three pieces of cake.
Let's not talk about the cake.
Oh, yes.
we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But I did have one thing I wanted to mention that came up, and I messaged you guys about this because I only caught it on my second watch. But at a certain point when Soji is talking to Troy, like in the garden and with the tomatoes and all of that, it looks like she has like some white streaks on the left side of her hair. And I thought like, oh, is that the sunlight or something? But then you see it later, I think, in the dinner scene, and nobody's commenting on it or anything in the episode. But
I didn't notice.
But I was just like, yeah, I didn't notice it until the second time. And I was like, is that... And I think you saw it too when I pointed it out, right, Christy?
Yeah, and I would need to go back and look at the other episodes and see if it's there for that.
I don't think it's been there before that I know. So I was just thinking, like, what it seemed deliberate, and like, what are they telling us?
She's stressed the hell out.
She's so stressed out that she has these white streaks. I mean, maybe.
I didn't notice it. Like, you showed me the picture, and I'm like, I don't quite know what I'm seeing here. I see what you're seeing, but I mean, I didn't notice it. I saw the episode four times. I didn't notice it, yeah.
Okay, it is kind of subtle, but anyway, it's just something I wanted to bring up because it was a question in my mind, like, what does that mean? Do we want to talk about Soji more, or does that cover it?
Well, my last question is, it's not a problem or anything like this. It's like one of those future questions, what's happening. Is like, what do you guys expect us to find when we get to this planet? Like, do you expect us to find this workspace that she saw in her dream? And like, that's going to be what we're going to find? Like, I don't quite know what we're going to, because they keep talking about this hive, or that was it? No, nest, sorry. And it's like, okay, which I also want some clarification on, because now that I'm looking back on it, why do they think that there's a nest of these things, right? Like, because it was the Romulan brother and sister, Narek and Nerissa, that brought up this nest idea. But it was Jurati who says that they're only made in twos.
Yeah, but you could have a nest that has a bunch of twos or something. I don't think it's been clarified like where they're getting that information from, but they're getting it from somewhere. Somebody's tipping them off on something somehow that we need to find out about soon, because we don't really know how they know that, right? And it's not like Picard knows that. Well, if there's a homeworld, maybe he'll assume that there's others there, no?
Well, but it's not a natural homeworld.
Yeah. I actually have a prediction for the what may happen toward the end of the season. You want to hear it? I don't know if it'll be way, way off, but like, I have this thought that they're going to get to this home world. Something's going to happen so that it's not really what she expected, or she can't settle there or whatever. And okay, I know I'm going out on a limb, but I just had this thought projecting forward. Like, if she can't do that, where would she go? And maybe Picard will end up adopting her. I don't know if that'll happen, but it was just a thought that flashed in my mind earlier today.
But Picard hates kids.
So people say. We proved that wrong in our second episode, right?
But she's an adult kid, so it works. Mm-hmm. She's both fully grown and only 3 years old.
I don't know what you guys think about that, but it's just something that occurred to me. Like, I don't think it's going to work out for her to be on this homeworld. So what happens? I hope she doesn't die, but...
She goes back to Nepenthe and is Kestra's little sister.
Oh, that would be interesting as well. Hmm, I hadn't thought about that.
This is way out on a limb, but I would not be surprised if the shadow-faced figure is Dr. Soong.
Oh, the one that's blurred out. Yeah, I was thinking about that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Somehow it's...
He was pretty old in Brothers, and I'm content that he died in Brothers.
Yeah, but he made a positronic brain body for his wife. So why would he not do that for himself?
I don't know. But I thought that maybe... It seems deliberate that they blurred out that...
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I said that too. Like, I don't know that it's going to be Dr. Soong, but it's I am expecting another twist.
Yeah.
Right, for who that person actually is. Which will be interesting. So,
one last thing about Soji, I think it's last, but we see her in a drawing again because Kestra's drawing her.
Yeah, because Kestra's drawing.
So whatever that is worth, she's again being depicted in an image.
I hadn't thought about that or what that says.
And I don't know, just it's there.
You want to hear my one hardcore picky thing?
Please.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
but this isn't the thing that you're really upset about.
No, no, I haven't scratched. No, we're not there yet.
Okay.
We'll get there about 2 hours in.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
So this is my hardcore picky thing. And I know this is picky and this is just me being picky, okay? But it's like, it's just one of those moments with writing and dialogue and stuff that I'm just like, ah, how could somebody have missed that? When Riker's doing the pizza thing, right? Uh-huh. And he's sitting there talking to him and he's playing the guessing game. Right? He's like, how am I doing? Right? And he's like guessing on Picard's actions. He's like, anti-cloaking means Romulans, and Romulans mean Tal Shiar. Like, you saying anti-cloaking doesn't mean Romulans. The conversation that you just had 30 minutes ago with Picard when you were talking about Romulans says Romulans.
Yes.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I thought about that as well. Like, he figured out about Romulans before, but...
Yeah,
I figured he was just being complete about his reasoning, so like doubled, like, okay, it's definitely Romulans, but yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, anywho.
I could totally see that.
That's super picky.
I have a super picky thing later, so it's all right.
Okay. So anything else on the what happens on Nepenthe you want to cover?
I want to have that house, please, but my wallet says no.
Gods, yes.
It's a great house.
That is my dream house. Right there. That is Brandon's dream. If you want to know Brandon, just hit pause on this episode. And that is Brandon right there. That is my heart on screen.
It seemed like such a peaceful place. Oh. It was great. Yeah. Loved it. Okay. So we've talked about the main part of the episode, which is on Nepenthe with Riker, Troi, Picard, Soji, Kestra. It's kind of the heart of the episode. But of course, there's more that's happened and we have to talk about it. It's not that that's a bad thing. But... let's talk about where we started out. So where we started out in this episode is a flashback to 3 weeks before, and it's basically an expanded version of the scene that we saw before with Jurati and O at the Daystrom Institute. So what I want to do actually, because we actually had a couple of requests about this. So what we get to see is basically this forced mind meld that O does. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of images that flash by, right? And I actually kind of went through it like shot by shot. So I want to describe it to you guys if that would be okay.
Do you have screenshots you could like message us? Because I'm just like, I'll wait until somebody posts this on Twitter. And I'm like, I haven't seen it on Twitter yet. So
no, I don't. I didn't have time to make screenshots. And I'm doing it from my TV. But anyway, but I'm going to describe it as best I can because we have had this.
Okay, but first, thank you for calling out the assault. From O?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a forced mind meld.
Yeah, like...
For sure.
Yeah. I haven't seen any blowback on that one on social media yet either. Well... And I'm just like, what?
I think that's because everybody's assuming she's a baddie, so they expect her to do bad things.
Yeah. Mm. So. See, and that's interesting because her tone was so fascinating. She sounded so genuine.
She sounded reasonable.
Yes, she certainly did. I'm not saying that she is reasonable, but her tone sounded really genuine in this whole conversation. Yeah. And I'm like, this is interesting.
Right, because Jurati was like, am I in trouble? And I was like,
no, not at all. We just need your help.
And yeah. I'm just going to force this stuff on you now. So, I think we'll talk more about the implications of this because I think it's pretty interesting. But so here's what I captured in like taking a look at the different shots. So go to the mind meld. And then I think the first thing you see after you see like a close up of Jurati's eyes is you see someone under a black hood. I think that's O. Now that is the part that you see for a couple of seconds. Yeah. So you guys probably saw that. It seems like it's O. Then after that, there's an overhead shot and there are 10 different people that seem to be in some kind of black outfit. Mm-hmm. And like when I paused it, it seemed like there's an energy discharge that's coming out from the center of something. Oh. And then there's a circle of rocks also on the outside. So there's these 10 people. And I was at first, I wanted to count it. I was like, is that the Conclave of Eight we heard about before? But there's 10. Maybe it's the Conclave of Eight plus two people that are unfortunate enough to be here. I don't know. Huh? So you see that. Then there's a shot of some kind of blue planet with some explosions on it. Then you see a person, and I couldn't tell if it was a human or if it was Romulan or Vulcan, and they're kind of grimacing and they have like green stuff on their nose or forehead. Maybe it's green blood or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's blood.
Okay. Then it comes back to a close-up of an explosion on a planet. And then you're seeing someone who's definitely either Vulcan or Romulan, female, I think, with green blood on their face and hands, and they're kind of like pulling at their face and like their eyes are kind of open wide. Then I know, and that goes by like super quick. And then after that, it seems like there's a city that you're seeing and there's an explosion that's spreading and there's, you know, some buildings and a shuttle nearby, something like that. And then the next shot, it seems like the city is like completely leveled. Then you see what looks to be a Romulan or Vulcan female, maybe the same one as before, with a disruptor to their head. Mm-hmm. And they're committing suicide. There's like an energy discharge coming out of the disruptor. So it's a lot of really like disturbing imagery in here. So then I think again, you see the city and it's just kind of devastated. And then there's a planet like exploding from the inside. So it's like molten inside and it's kind of blackened on the outside. Then that's the point at which the mind meld breaks and O is kind of like startled by what's happening and Jurati throws up. So like, those are kind of like the images that happen in this thing.
Mm-hmm. And what is she showing her? Is she seeing the future? Like, what is this?
You know what? Like, it made me think that I don't know whether it would be the future or the past and some vision that some people got. I mean, there's a lot more I think we need explained about this because I don't know. I mean, the other thing is for some of the shots in there, I think what they had found out in the Trek Core review is that there are a couple of like scenes of planetary destruction that are actually reused visual effects from, if memory serves, from Discovery.
That makes sense.
That relates to control in some way, but I don't know if that's just like they reused it for something that was really quick or if there's like, so I was just watching this today and I was like, I don't quite know what this means. We've heard something about like synthetic life is a real danger to life in the galaxy. I think they even threw out like a trillion souls across half the galaxy or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they're going with it, but what do you guys think?
Computers are bad. Take away the cell phones from the kids.
Don't let them text under the table. Honestly, the first thing I thought about this, and I wanted to see what all that stuff was, and I didn't have a chance to go through it slow-mo. But
I hope I described it well.
Yeah,
I tried. I tried to do it on my TV, and I couldn't get it to pause quick enough, and then I couldn't get it on my
iPad. I was almost not getting it to pause quick enough.
All access needs to back, but yeah. Be able to do that. But that's a whole other issue.
And just slow it down much. Yeah.
Yeah. It's slow. The first thing I thought of with this is proof that O is Vulcan, or did we just find out that not Romulans can mind meld? Because that was always kind of out there.
Because I was trying to look and do some research, but I don't think it's ever been definitively said that it's not something that mm-hmm. Romulans can do. Mm-hmm. And in addition, like, I think the way that they've talked about it in some interviews, like and I think even on like the Ready Room, Frakes was referring to O as a Romulan. So it's like,
that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if she's, was involved in the unification movement because that would be a logical place for her to learn that. Yeah. So
Well, I don't remember who it was, but it was a few months ago. I was interacting with somebody on Twitter, and he came up with the best theory, this person that I was dealing with. He's like, O was the captain that Discovery was going to get, and she's still pissed off about it.
I saw that. That's hilarious.
That's great.
So that's why she turned bad, is because she never got to command Discovery at the end of season one.
Yeah, and she's still pissed, like, I don't know. What would it be, 140 years later?
Vulcans live that long, right?
Yeah,
that'd be great. Like, yeah. It's hilarious.
To me, this made it more clear that she was Vulcan, because the way she was talking and everything was very calm, very Vulcan, emotionless and whatnot. You know, and the mind meld, I mean, I don't know. Who knows where they're going? I mean, if there's letting slip that she's a Romulan, then I'll go with it. I mean, I guess I don't know that it matters either way, but I don't know. To me, this just made it more clear to me that she's Vulcan.
I thought at first, like, oh, that must mean that she's Vulcan. But then I was like, we've never had it said that Romulans can't do mind melds. We've just never seen one.
But the Romulans all left Vulcan significantly before, you know, the practice of mind melds was like taught and explored, because it was really a taboo thing, right? And
I got the sense it was a taboo thing like in the Enterprise era, but it didn't used to be. And it was an ancient thing from thousands of years before, from before the Romulans left. That's the sense I always got.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I guess we'll find out. I mean, to me, I just looked at it and I was like, well, this just leads to more questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think I've seen people saying like, oh, here we go again with, you know, a bunch of life in the galaxy is in danger. And
yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I think it could be different, and I'll just see where it goes. I'm just kind of intrigued with, like, because they threw a bunch of imagery and it means something. Yeah. I'm just not sure what yet.
For me, it's way more interesting if she's a Vulcan working with these people than if she's just another undercover Romulan.
Agreed.
I don't know.
I could see that.
So I hope she's Vulcan myself. I think that's way more interesting.
It could be. So, yeah, so there's this mind meld, and it's kind of traumatic for Jurati, but basically right after that, she's like, okay, what do you want me to do? So I think, like, pretty readily, I mean, it takes a little bit of time, but I think fairly readily, she's like, what do you want me to do? I was maybe a little bit surprised by that, but it must have been that it was just, like, so compelling, or she feels that if someone is doing a mind meld that it can't possibly be a deception or something. I don't know what you guys thought about
that. Or it was planted in her head that this needs to be done, and she just saw all the visions of destruction as a excuse.
I think that just, like, so we saw flashes, but there was more information transmitted, and Jurati is just such a pure human being, right, that She couldn't comprehend everything she was shown, and all that she saw was the destruction. And, you know, I think she clearly understands that this has to do with androids and synthetic life.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why she's so traumatic later in the episode. Right. And why she's so upset about having to find this synth. Why does it have to be me? That she's just like, I can't help this happen. I have to prevent this from happening. I think she's just all in because of what she saw.
Yeah. A needs of the many kind of thing. Like, well, if a couple people need to die so that a trillion people don't.
Yeah
I think she kind of saw it that way, which is, but I thought Allison Pill, like,
she's awesome.
Playing it really well because she's just, I mean, we'll talk about it more, like what happens later kind of on La Sirena, but you can really just feel like the terrible conflict that's like eating her up about this thing. So I thought it was portrayed really well. And then I think at the end of that opening scene, so O has this like triangular, like glowing blue tracking device. And I was like, it's like the breath mint tracking device, like just put it in your mouth and chew.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was kind of, interesting.
Nanoprobe technology.
This is my picky thing. Take this does not automatically mean put this in your mouth.
She must know something about how these things work or something.
I think would have worked better if she'd said take this and she just had it in her hand and then she said it must be chewed. I think that would have worked better. It's totally, you know, but take this does not automatically mean eat this. That's all.
Very true.
Yeah.
Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you put it in your mouth. Don't you stuff it in your face.
Yeah, if somebody gives you something that it isn't clearly food, you wouldn't put it in your mouth. You'd be like, what do you want me to do with it?
Right, and it didn't look like food.
It was kind of interesting.
Here, Justin, like, I'm actually, take this laptop.
It's too big for my mouth.
Chew it.
Don't worry. Chew it. Break it into little pieces. Yeah. No, it was kind of an interesting choice because usually you would think like a tracking device, she'd have like a hypo spray or something and like right at the neck or something to inject it that way. But it was an interesting choice. So anything else we want to say about that kind of opening scene that expands on what we saw of Jurati and Oh before? I did notice, interestingly, that they both say the word Oh, not like the name, but the word a couple of times. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was just like, Oh. It's a small thing. Okay.
It's in like my expression of surprise from now on is Ozer.
Oh.
Okay.
Sir. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about, and this kind of extends a little bit what we were talking about for Jurati. So there are some different scenes that take place in the present of this episode where Rios and Raffi and Jurati are the only three people on the ship, apparently, besides the holograms. So, you know, for a lot of this, it's like, you know, they're caught in the tractor beam and then they're allowed to leave. And then Narek is kind of shadowing them. But there's also some stuff that's going on with Rios kind of suspecting Raffi, or maybe that's part of their plan to lure Jurati into saying something. And then, you know, Jurati has this moment where she wants to, I guess, get rid of the tracking device. Anyway, there's a lot more that happened with that, but I'm guessing this is the section where you had an issue.
Dear Lord, I am furious at this section. Furious at this, okay? So you just said it, where you're like, when Rios is suspecting Raffi. Okay, mm-hmm. So these people clearly have a history together. Okay, they know each other
well. Rios and Raffi, yeah.
Rios and Raffi know each other well to the point that they can look at each other and communicate without saying anything, right? Rios looks at Raffi. Raffi looks at him and winks. He knows that she's going to go take care of her because she's being a burden right now by having a meltdown. Okay, uh-huh. So she goes down. She's feeding her cake. Okay, so yes, what I'm watching this is they're like, okay, so there's something wrong here and we got to figure it out. And they clearly realize that Jurati's the problem. So they're tag teaming working her. Raffi's down there giving her cake, lowering her defenses, getting her like a little bit worked out. So she's going to confess something and tell them what's going on. Uh-huh. That gets distracted because Raffi goes up there and then Rio sits her down and every word for word that he says is, in my opinion, also the way that it was played is that he's trying to fish out. He's trying to pull out the confession from her because he's like, oh, like, you know, Raffi, I'm starting to not trust her. Like, it could be because of the Romulans, right? Like, he knows that the Romulans are involved in this. He's pulling this all out. And I'm like, oh, good. They're trying to pull a confession out of her because you know what? They care about her and they can see what kind of a good person is. And whatever has happened, they realize that she's in over her head and probably doesn't have all the information. And she just has made a poor choice. They can see that in her. Uh-huh. And then what happens? Rios goes up to the top and is actually like looking at her side-eyed, questioning her, and then says, Raffi, I got a real reason to do this. I am upset by that they actually played it, that he's suspicious of her. I am furious at that. Ugh.
See, it's funny because like I saw people talking about how like Rios and Raffi were like tag teaming to get information about Jurati. When I saw it, I didn't see it that way. I actually somehow saw it that Rios really did genuinely somehow have a suspicion of Raffi for some reason.
Uh-huh.
I did saw not it that way. Yeah. And then when he goes up, he's expressing that.
I did not at all for one millisecond think that he actually did have a suspicion of her until he got up to the top floor and started like looking at her side eyes and started rubbing his beard. And
it's
I'm
so
like,
funny because what are like, you doing? Both times I saw it, I know you didn't believe it for a millisecond, but I did believe like maybe that's what was going on. So I had no problem with it.
that character is smarter than that. Rios is smarter than that. I don't know. Like I am very upset with that take on it. I'm very upset with it because that character is not that at all. I could tell these people have a relationship, a working relationship. They are well beyond any of this. And,
although it is true that like I think we found out where the bridge is in relation to the sick bay, and it's just like down the stairs and down a little bit. Uh-huh. So maybe he was doing that thinking that Jurati would hear about that. Is the only thing I could think about. But I took it a completely different way that that he was actually starting to think that for some reason because of what happened in the previous episode where he was getting closer to Jurati. But
yeah, but both of these people are smart people. And look at the way that Jurati is acting, right? They're all like, yes, you were gung-ho. You chose to come along here. Now, why are you telling us to try and stop this and go? Raffi's down there because she knows there's a problem and she's trying to suss it out of her, right? Like, I don't know. They know that there's a problem. They know that there's something going wrong. You know what? It's probably Raffi. Oh, my goodness.
That's so interesting because I definitely saw it completely differently. I saw Raffi as actually having concern for what Jurati is, real concern for what Jurati is going through. So I actually took a lot of it on face value.
Chrissy.
And maybe I'm not a good viewer for doing that, but I saw it completely the opposite way. But Chrissy, tell us how you felt about it.
Well, now that you've said that, it makes sense, Brandon.
But you hadn't thought that
no,
before.
No, but I did not get that before. But what I got out of it was less plot-driven. I wrote down here, the scene between Raffi and Jurati very purposefully showed the differences between them. The straight-laced Jurati's vice was cake, and chocolate milk went too far. And under similar circumstances, we'd have seen Raffi at the bottom of a bottle of whiskey. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing, to me that read as Raffi trying to help her and not really knowing how to do it because she wants cake and milk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't take it as, I did think it was odd that Rios would suspect Raffi, but then we don't know what their relationship had been. We don't know. I mean, she was in Starfleet security. She could have, you know, done one over on him at some point as part of her job.
He does say something about thinking it's suspicious that she went to Free Cloud and returned, and there was no explanation because she didn't want to. We know it's because she didn't want to talk about this personal thing, but he doesn't necessarily know. So I was actually buying like, yeah, I guess that could make sense from that perspective.
Yes.
And Raffi is like going through all of this addiction and maybe isn't herself for what Rios is like used to. So it's like so interesting, Brandon, because I like totally didn't see it the way that you did, saw it completely the opposite and took what was happening at face value.
Yeah.
Until I saw comments later, like that they were tag teaming. And I was like, really? Okay.
So
I love your interpretation though. I almost hope that that's how it's going.
Except it's inconsistent with that other scene,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Unless it's the thing about wanting her to hear it, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It better be that then. Okay. Right. But so to me, when after the last episode, when Raffi was talking with Emmy and Rios took her to the room, like again,
yeah.
Okay. It's not Picard doing that. Okay. It's not like they worked together and they saved as many Romulans as they could. Like they were closely together. We read the book. We read the comic. They were working closely together. She was in awe of Picard. They were close. She calls him JL.
Yeah.
Okay. They've got a good friendship. Yep. It's not Jean-Luc who's taking her to the bed to get her to rest. It's Rios. Okay. So to me, that simple act shows the history that they've got and they are close as well in another different kind of way. But she also says to him, I'm misremembering. I don't have the quote in front of me.
All right.
But, she says, did you know I have a son or something like that?
Yeah.
Right. So
something like that.
In my head, I mean, like I didn't need this to go by her saying that, you know, people for how long and you don't even know about their sons. When they cut away, they're having the conversation about her son on the planet and why she was there. Right. So like, like in my head, I just filled in that blank with that. And I filled in that blank before I saw this episode that she was telling him what was going on down there. So.
Yeah.
I can see that. And Jurati wouldn't know that because she wasn't there for that conversation.
Yeah.
So let's just say they were trying to get the information out of Jurati. And the thing on the bridge was just hoping that Jurati would hear it to make it more believable, maybe.
But now she's in a coma because she wanted to kill herself.
Or he was just being...
I don't think she wanted to kill herself, though. At first, I thought, well, maybe she was. But I think that she knew that it was because of her that they were being tracked and she wanted to get rid of the tracking device. So the point was to get rid of the tracking device, not to kill herself, is how I took it out on my rewatch.
But we got that warning from the computer, right? So
warning for some species, it has neurotoxic, you know, capabilities, but it didn't specifically say which species or what the effect was. and she might know that the EMH would save her or something. But I didn't take it the second time as the, yeah.
What is up with that EMH? He just activates himself, walks over, kneels down in front of her, just sits there?
Well, obviously like, not, because no, he got her into the bed. And
yeah.
He didn't do it. Like, well, afterwards, he cuts to the scene, but he's like sitting there looking at her for a long time when she's like passing.
Maybe a couple seconds, because yeah. He's trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's long enough to determine, did she fall over and hit her head or what, you know.
I'm still agitated at Rios, so.
It's okay.
Okay.
We understand.
All right.
One other thing agitated me about this, and this is also nitpicky. Because this is something that we see a lot more of on television now than we used to. Can we just stop seeing and hearing people vomiting? I'm done with that. I don't need to see it. I don't need to hear it. It almost bothered me more than each head's eye.
You know, I'm emailing you Family Guy clips right now.
And that's, yeah, yeah. But it's just putting it out there. It's my own nitpicky thing.
I mean,
have we ever had it on Star Trek before?
Well, I don't know that it's been on Star Trek, but there was a whole Game of article Thrones.
On
there was
vomiting on Memory Alpha. And oh, good. I think I don't know if we actually see it, but there are
looking
references.
This up, Justin?
Because I like to look up everything.
Yes.
Here's the difference though for me. And I understand it's like a personal thing. Like what happens to Icheb is not a natural thing. That's a violent thing.
I was
vomiting
making a bad
is a
joke.
Natural human function.
This is true.
Anyway.
I was making a bad joke. That's true.
But did it really like bother you a lot?
Well, we watched this over dinner. So okay. It's kinda like, okay.
I think I've gotten used to not eating when I first watched this show.
There's your problem, Chrissy. I'm up at 3 a.m. to watch this, right? So it doesn't get spoiled for me on Twitter.
Yeah, I can't do that. Anyway,
okay,
so
no.
About the thing she injects herself with, noranium hydride is what it's called. Noranium is not a real thing. It's some kind of metal. It comes from the Vengeance Factor, I think. Or one of those.
No, that's right.
But a hydride is something that is a compound of a metal and hydrogen. So whatever, you know, chemists out there, you know, if there's something relevant to this, because I was thinking maybe she replicated this with the idea that if she could get it into her bloodstream, that it would grab on to the nanites or whatever it was that was in that pill. So
that's
the
idea that I got from it. So I have something that came up when I was just more as like a question, because at a certain point when Raffi is trying to figure out some stuff on the cube and she says something about some freaky Borg language or something like that, and she's looking at this display that seems to have like a bunch of like interlocking circles. Not quite.
Yes.
Was that art from those crazy Romulans?
Oh.
Art?
So that's what I thought it was. It looked to me like
from
it
the
was
disordered.
The disorder art on the wall, right? There was somebody standing there when she was looking at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because she was looking at like the surveillance. Yeah, that's right. Something like that, right? She was seeing some view inside the cube before that.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's what I wanted to bring that up. I had written it down. I'm like, where is she seeing this, and what is she seeing? Because it looked to me like they were drawings of the circles, right? So I don't know if they're drawing the planet or what. But I'm like, it just made the connection in my head that these were drawings that the, what did you just call them again?
The disordered,
had drawn.
Interesting.
But I don't know.
Maybe it's artwork, because I actually made a note of it. Like there are interlocking circles and there's rows of like kind of cigar shaped things with tapered ends. And then she zooms in and there's more interlocking circles. It made me think of like the symbol on the necklace that Daj and Soji have. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was just a question, like they're putting that in for a reason and I don't know exactly why. And also I'll pay attention to like the previously on Star Trek Picard to see like what they want to highlight for you. And one of the things they were highlighting was the disordered. So like, I don't know how that fits in, but.
Right. Yeah. At the previously on. Yeah. That's why I thought that was because of the previously on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that was another thing in there. Can I bring up something that I forgot to bring up in the section about Riker?
By all means.
So while, Picard and Riker are like sitting on this dock on Nepenthe, which I think is a great scene. Picard happens to say, "Do you ever think about shipping out again?" And Riker says, "Well, I'm still on active reserve, but it would have to be for a very good reason." I don't know. That seemed deliberate, like leaving it open for him to be activated activated on reserve, not as an android, somewhere in the future.
And they still, well, okay, well, since you brought that up, and they still calling him Commander, is that a slip of the tongue, or did he have a demotion?
Where did they call Riker Commander?
Troy was called Commander.
I was trying to note it. Troy was called Commander.
I know Troy was, but I don't know. I thought they called him Commander Riker at one point.
I don't think so, because I was watching the subtitles, and I don't think they gave him a title.
I might be getting you confused. I'm okay with that.
That's
okay.
So. But let me know if you find it, because I'd be curious, but I didn't see that. Yeah. So anyway, that was an interesting thing. Okay, anything else about what we see on La Sirena?
I do have a little bit here. So I love that Girardi's thing is cake.
Yeah.
I don't know, like milk and cake. Like to me, again, this just enunciates the innocence of this character.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just love it.
It was very childlike when she was asking Raffi, like, do you have cake? I mean,
yeah,
like,
exactly. Yes. Which kind of makes it creepy that she was sleeping with 90-year-old Maddox, right? But, you know, that's a whole other story. So.
He was older. He wasn't quite 90.
Yes. He was probably only 70. Yes. Because it was.
Yeah. We tried to figure that out. And I'm not sure.
We were trying to figure that out. I was almost angry at something, and I'm glad they didn't go that way. I don't know what they were going to do, but the first time I watched this episode, when she's like, let Auntie Raffi take care of you, the way she was talking to her, I am like, if Raffi gives her drugs, I am going to hail Raffi. Yeah.
I didn't think she would go there.
So I am so glad that all she gave her was cake.
Let me hook you up with some snake leaf.
Oh boy. Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. The way that she was talking to her, I'm like, no. And so when they cut to the next scene and she was actually given her cake, I'm like, oh, thank God.
That just goes to the innocence and the not innocent.
Yeah.
Because she's kind of treating her like a child.
Yes.
And Girardi seems to have no problem with that. So.
Because I could just see that going south with Girardi being inadvertently high and just doing a whole bunch of nonsense, you know.
I'm just glad
that they didn't do that.
Yeah. They already did that on Discovery.
Yeah, that would definitely happen to Tilly.
Yeah.
So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Should we go on to our...
I have one more question that's like extremely vital to this here, and this is like another issue that I have.
All right.
Please explain to me why Narek is following them.
Why Narek is following them? So that he can find where they're going, because I think they know that they would be going to see Picard and Soji.
They're tracking Girardi. They know where they're going because they just got this information out of her mind. They know what planet they're. Why is he following them?
They don't know which planet that they're going to.
They know what planet they're going to end up at.
The Romulans know about like this homeworld.
Yes.
But they don't know about Nepenthe. They didn't get that information.
No, they didn't get that information. So, but that's fine. If they can't find them, they know where they're going to end up. So even still, but they're tracking
but
her.
But it's probably better to get them beforehand.
Tracking Girardi. Why is he that close?
What's the limit of the tracking device? Does it go light years? Or do you need to have a ship nearby that's getting the tracking signal?
I don't know. I'm just like, why is he following them?
It was fine.
Like,
I
mean, to me, so the fact that they know the endgame planet of where they're going, of this homeworld,
is
like,
why not get them before then?
Because they're just going to kill them all anyways. The goal is to get to this planet and wipe out whatever androids that are there. What's the difference?
Yeah, but if you can get Picard and Soji before they would even get there, then that is one less thing to worry about in your plan. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
I don't know.
Two possibilities here. One, this is going to be part of his redemption arc that none of us want to see. And he's,
I don't know. He seemed more like determined.
Sorry. I just threw up my cake.
God, please don't.
No more throwing up.
No, none of that. What was it? Oh, right. Okay. So either this is going to be the redemption arc thing that we don't want to see, or, okay, this actually shows us that, okay, Girardi got the tracking device from O. O, we know, is working with Narek's sister, Narissa. Okay. Oh, I can't remember her name. And obviously, Narek's working with Narissa. So now we know that O is working with either the Tal Shiar or the other group.
Well, Jad Vash.
I think that was clear in the first episode she appeared in.
Another piece of information, you know.
Yeah, that it's connected. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
See, and it's not necessarily the redemption arc too, because he was doing that funky, mysterious whatever with the little cubics things, right? So, because he's a badass.
Romulan fidget spinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I kind of, I kind of like that, though, that he was just, like, brooding with his fidget spinner. I don't know. Just kind of enjoyed
it's
that.
The Rubik's but- Death Cube.
Yeah. So many possible episode titles for
yes.
this one. Okay. So there is one more section, but anything before we get to that? Anything else?
I think I've spent my anger.
Okay. That's good. Let's have great joy and gratitude. No,
not quite.
It's probably not going to be that in this section. So the other part of the episode has to do with Elnor and Hugh on the cube. So in the previous episode, and we talked about this, I said it worked for me fine, but anyway, that Elnor and Hugh are there and are kind of fighting against Nerissa. There's a bunch of stuff that happens. Hugh dies, which is sad. Mm-hmm. And then Elnor happens to find one of, you know, Seven's calling cards. So,
boy, that was convenient.
Picard.
It was a little bit convenient. I was thinking, like, I thought the first time I saw it that I missed it and Hugh, like, handed one that he happened to have to him when he died, but I don't think he did. I think it was something he had on his person that fell off when he died or something like that, but anyway,
well, regardless. I mean, when Hugh's dying and he's like, you're going to need an XB, I'm like, oh, we are getting Seven then, again, so.
Yeah. But anyway, like, I want to get your opinion, Chrissy, on, like, this section that was with Elnor and Hugh on the cube.
My biggest question is, how does one activate the queen cell? And was Hugh intending to create a new queen, which would mean a new hive?
So my interpretation on that is the queen cell is where they were to evacuate, like that gateway. Was the queen cell.
But he talked about it when they were...
He talked about taking a control away from the Romulans of the cube.
Yeah, when they were running toward it, he said, I was concerned about the amount of power it had or something to that effect. So, I was interested to know, because in the books we have all this stuff about how you make a Borg queen and there's the royal jelly and stuff, and which is rather gross, but that's a whole other issue. Well, it's not gross. Anyway, the thing that I thought of was Ramda. I didn't go to Seven as the XB that would be put in the queen cell, but Ramda.
I didn't at first. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, he's calling the Fenris Rangers, so Seven's going to be back. So. Yeah, I'm not quite sure and like what that would mean. I mean, and also like at this point, I mean, we still have Elnor on the cube and we care about what happens to him, but like otherwise the story has kind of moved elsewhere.
Do we?
I do. I like Elnor a lot, but I know we feel differently about this, but anyway, he's a main character, so you have to keep track of him. But now, like, Nerissa's beamed off the cube and Narek is following, you know, La Sirena and Picard and Soji elsewhere, so it's like, and Hugh's dead.
Yeah,
so it kind of feels a little bit like that's been left behind, but I'm not sure what they're going to do with that.
Yeah, this will be interesting to see how this all plays out. I don't know, like, I'm still disappointed in Elnor's plot line here, right? Because he's, like, he's pretty useless here.
I don't know if I would exactly say that.
So, he's stayed behind to protect the situation, and then, like,
he stayed behind to make sure that they don't activate the spatial trajectory again or find the location. He's accomplished that, and now he's stuck on the cube, so he has to fight his way out.
Right, that's but he's, like, he's not sticking anywhere near Hugh, right? Like, so when we first get on there, he's just, like, gone, like, doing, like, random whatever.
Yeah, they probably should have put another scene in there, but I was taking it to be, like, that there were different groups of Romulans and that he was having to fight some off somewhere else and then had to come back and it was too late.
Or they had captured
before they killed the XBs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, but that's not my biggest problem with this thing. My biggest problem is, like, Hugh, when people are fighting, like, don't look out the side of the container or whatever. Just, like, stay back, okay? Because that wasn't smart. But that was the biggest problem I had with it. Like, he didn't have to, like, crane his neck to see what was going on.
Well, he didn't have to die. I just don't understand, like, why bring him back to just kill him off like this? I don't know. Like, I was checking to see what Jonathan Del Arco had been tweeting, like, after I saw they killed him off. Okay, I thought that was funny, but, you know...
I didn't quite get it.
I didn't catch it at first.
But no, like, I mean, I think that that Hugh was important in the previous episode in the interactions that he had with Picard, and Picard being able to see what's going on and believing in that work, which I think will come in later. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, when is it ever necessary for a character to die, right? Like, I don't know. There's a bunch of character deaths that I'd say, why was that necessary or why do I want that to happen? But deaths do happen. And I think it was sad to see this one, and I would have rather it not happen, but I don't know.
So seeing Hugh die in this, like, my immediate thought is like, this to me feels like a waste. This feels like a waste to this character. It doesn't feel like a satisfactory end to him. I don't mind people dying and getting killed off, but this didn't feel this to me. All of a sudden, then I start thinking, like, what would have been better? Like, I almost, rather than seeing Seven as a Fenris Ranger, I almost would have liked to have seen her in charge of this XB scenario as a former XB who'd been XB for an extremely long time, a character that we love, right? A character that we know. Not that she would die at this point, but interacting and working with these Romulans, trying to bring out these other Borgs as like some type of redemption thing. Cause we've seen that she's got her, you know, bones in her closet, like skeletons in her closet about how she feels about being an ex-Borg, right? And then that would also add more of the motivation needed against Bajazel, right? Because Bajazel is out there trying to steal and kill these people that she's actively trying to save. I don't know. Like, I started thinking that, and I'm like, that would have been like a fun way to see Seven as well, doing something redemptive for her character.
Yeah, that could have worked. I disagree that it's a waste to see Hugh. I think that he did definitely add something in the interactions with Picard and what we see. Maybe it would have been interesting to see Seven in that role, but I'm glad that we got Hugh as well. So I'll just disagree. But Chrissy, what do you think? I feel like a lot of times it's like Brandon will say something and then I'll disagree and I'll be like, Chrissy, can you break this tie?
I was thinking that earlier too.
Pull something else out of the air entirely. Well, and I'll do that again.
You're the backbone of this podcast, Chrissy, more than you can possibly know.
Very nice of you to say. Thank you. I think we see a place where we didn't need Icheb and Icheb's death. Because if she had been working with Hugh and they had been, they didn't have to be like romantically involved or anything. This is just somebody who's a good friend and an important part of her life. And he's an important, you know, she's an important part of his life. And there we go. There's motivation. I mean, I know Nerissa isn't working with, Jaisal that we know of, but
She's probably not.
I don't think that we know of. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's just, it's other than, you know, Icheb and his eye.
I mean, I think it's an interesting thought, but again, I'll say I do actually like and appreciate how it's unfolded so far. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It's, Hugh dying is sad, but I didn't.
It is sad, but you know, so far they've had a facility for killing guest characters from TNG or TNG and Voyager, I guess now. Yeah.
That goes back to what we were talking about with Star Wars and the Rikers, Troy Rikers.
Yeah. Let us talk about canon and books and comics connections. You guys have favorite ones, Brandon?
My favorite one was the Kzinti. I thought it was really cute. So
yeah, I love which are the cat-like people from the animated series episode, The Slaver Weapon, right?
The only episode to not feature Kirk.
That is right. It also does not have the Enterprise in it.
I believe that's correct, yep.
Yeah. So, cool. That is an interesting one. But yeah, that was a cool deep reference. I was like, did he just say Kzinti? That's really cool.
A lot of people thought he said Zindi. I saw that going around on Twitter,
yeah.
Too. Yeah.
But it was because
seeing this, I thought it was Zenkethi, and I'm like, they spelt it wrong.
Oh. Yeah.
Right? You know? So, and they're like, wait, oh, no, Kzinti, that's the other one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, little side thing. Zenkethi would be great to see because we've seen like the references and they have great stuff in the books, but we've never seen them on screen.
They all sound the same. Zindi, Zenkethi, Kzinti, it's all the same.
They're like Aziz.
Yeah, the Kzinti was really cool. Chrissy, you have a favorite one?
Yeah, I think we had a huge missed opportunity that Captain Crandall could have been Captain O'Connor.
You think so?
Love it.
Well, you need a character. Well, okay, but you need somebody who's kind of a scoundrel off to the side. And if he were O'Connor, you might not have the weirdness that Brandon brought up because Riker would know he's actually harmless.
But what about Captain Yates?
Well, she's not a lovable scoundrel. I'm assuming that Crandall's kind of a lovable scoundrel. And Troy also, and Riker
don't seem to love him too much. I don't know.
Well, we don't know anything about him, but that would have been another place for her to get information about Data too.
Okay, I think it's more problematic if it's O'Connor because, you know, like, he's like a womanizer and whatnot from what we've seen.
He is, yeah.
Well, yeah, so. But, okay. Never mind then. I thought it would have been cool. Maybe it's because
And then Riker and them, yeah, they know who he is, right? Because they've experienced
him. It's a little bit of small world syndrome, though, so I do understand why they didn't do it.
What if it was Captain Baudet who was the, with the transparent skull that Jadzia
Okay, wait dates. For it, wait for it. That's my new headcanon.
Oh, your transparent headcanon, yeah.
Transparent headcanon.
That guy always fascinated me, like, if they could ever do the transparent skull guy. But anyway.
Oh, they could
now. It's just Mars Attacks. It's just the Mars Attacks aliens.
I guess so.
That's fun. Yeah.
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 That's what I pictured every time they said him with the transparent skull. I just pictured the yak, 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 yak. I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny because there are people that have done like fan art around that and it kind of looks like a transparent fish because there is actually like a fish that has kind of like a transparent head. But anyway. So your favorite connection was one that wasn't didn't a connection. Exist. It was a missed opportunity. Okay.
Well, the other one it was... She says, pretend our dinner table is the ready room. And I was like, that's fantastic. I love it. But why wasn't it the observation lounge where they were literally sitting around a table?
Hmm. I guess
because they didn't have a PowerPoint, I guess. But
ready room just rolls off the tongue better than observation lounge.
And of course, there was Thaddeus.
So they can tie into the podcast with Will Wheaton.
Oh, that's true. Probably.
you know,
the one that Trek FM has had for years before that. That's fine. I have some stuff about Thaddeus Riker, but I'll talk about that in the History Corner.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. We haven't done that yet.
Yeah. Okay. So I have my typically long list, so bear with me. Because I just love noting all the stuff. So when Kestra was talking to Soji, she's talking about Data and saying, you know, he's trying to be more human. He could do all these amazing things, like learning how to ballroom dance. So it made me think of Data's day where Crusher is teaching him how to dance. And I think she also mentioned like him playing violin. So it was just nice, some nice callbacks to stuff Data's done.
And bending metal.
Yeah.
She says he wanted to dream. Which is birthright. He wanted to tell jokes, which brings us back to Mr. O'Connor, and learn how to ballroom dance. Because I actually wrote that down, how she said it. She did ask about the violin, but that was when Soji was in the shower. Sorry, mean to interrupt.
So anyway, I love those callbacks. So here's one that I noticed. So at some point, Riker says, smell that, Antarian basil. Although the way Jonathan Frakes pronounced it sounds like Antarian, but it's Antarian in the subtitles, Antarian. So... that made me think of the different like Antares references that we've had in Star Trek. So there's Beyond Antares, which Uhura sings in a couple of episodes, Conscience of the King and the Changeling. There's Antarian Brandy in Is There in Truth No Beauty? Antarian Glowwater in The Trouble with Tribbles. And then, of course, in Star Trek II, there's Khan talking about chasing Kirk around the moons of Nibia and around the Antares maelstrom and around Perdition's flame. So anyway, it just made me think there's a bunch of Antares references that relates to.
Cool.
You mentioned Tyken's Rift. That's a reference to Night Terrors. Second one in a row where we've talked about Night Terrors, Whole Moon Circles. Yeah. Okay, so the Bunnicorn, like, you know, the kind of unicorn bunny.
Yes.
And this was in the Trek Core review.
This is a deep, long, hard reach.
for it to be some kind of homage to the unicorn dog in The Enemy Within?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I think they both are unicorn. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
It made me think about that. Okay. There's another thing where Picard refers to his solid duritanium heart, which is a reference to his artificial heart that he talks about in Samaritan Snare and Tapestry. And also, duritanium is... an actual substance referred to in a couple of Voyager and Enterprise episodes. Do we talk about the Gormagander reference?
No, but so that's a good one.
Jurati's Tuck makes a reference to a Gormagander, which is like the space whale that's in magic to make the Saiyan's man go mad. I guess that is it. But let me add here a point of trivia, which I thought was a cool thing that was in the Trek News review. So with this episode, Jonathan Frakes is now the only actor to appear in 5 Star Trek series. Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and Picard. Now, there have been actors that have been 3 or 4 series, but never 5. So, isn't that crazy? He's been in 5 out of the 8 Star Trek series so far.
I love it.
And another cool thing is he and Marina Sirtis are also the only actors to play the same character in 4 different Star Trek shows. So, and that was because he played Thomas Riker in DS9, but Marina Sirtis has been Troi in TNG, Voyager, Enterprise, and Picard. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Cool.
I thought that was a cool thing. He's been in 5 different shows. I mean, not to mention that he's directed, I think, 4 different series. Yeah. Okay, I'm done. I know that was a long list.
All right.
Chrissy's History Corner.
Oh, you don't have any, Brandon?
Let's go to Chrissy's History Corner.
Okay, well, I just my Kazinti one.
Okay. Yeah. There were 2 more I thought of. Okay. Will never calls Deanna anything but Imzadi, which I just loved. He says twice to her.
I guess that's right. He says Imzadi.
And then this might be a deep reach, but the way Kestra comes running out at them from the woods reminded me of Renee in Family. When Picard's walking into town.
Yeah, and they hold up their hands. Yes. It's definitely feels like a family reference.
So that was nice. Okay, so this was not super heavy on history stuff, but we do have some reference to Homer's works with Nepenthe. And I think I said last week that it was the place of forgetting. That was a mistake on my part. It is a fictional drug mentioned in Homer's works as having the power to banish sorrow. Helen gives it to the Priam, King Priam, and somebody else. Some historians think that this is actually a reference to opium. So that's interesting.
Hmm.
Okay. But the one that I jumped on was Thaddeus Riker in the Civil War. Okay. So we're told that, and this goes back to Voyager's Death Wish. Okay. So we're told that Thaddeus Riker was a colonel of the 102nd New York Infantry, and he was involved in Sherman's March. And Sherman's March was a very interesting little episode in the Civil War because it was military strategy, but there was also almost a level of personal vengeance on his part. Not that he necessarily had any personal connections to the area, but he was absolutely determined to wipe out the Confederacy.
This is a real Thaddeus Riker?
Oh, no, excuse me, Sherman. Sherman, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Kate, sorry.
Context of Sherman.
Kate.
Yeah.
Yeah, because actually in the episode, they say Thaddeus Riker and they have a picture there, but it's a picture of, you know, someone with a different name.
That is...
it was actually in the Civil
War. Yeah, it's the picture is Louis Stegman, who actually was the commander of the 102nd New York and was wounded exactly as they described Thaddeus Riker having been. So, but yeah, just the thing about Sherman's March is very interesting because other than the fact that he wanted to literally burn the Confederacy, I don't know that there's necessarily any connections here. If you want to talk about things burning and Mars but that is really not connected.
Yeah.
But,
I'm sure that this was a reference to that Thad, but I'm like, why would Riker be naming his son after this guy? Like, I don't know. Like, that just seemed a little odd a choice of name for me.
Yeah. I was confused for a minute.
It could be something that's propagated in their family. I mean, it may not necessarily be that Civil War person, but for us, it's a reference to that because we haven't heard about any other, you know, Thaddeus in Riker's family tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a cool reference. But
I was confused for a minute. I forgot his father's name was Kyle. I was like, oh, that's his dad.
Yeah.
No, it's Kyle. But, so Sherman.
I don't think he would name a child after his dad. They didn't really get along very
well. Well, it's Next Generation, so everything's okay after they made up. So.
Oh, that's true. And
he's going to have somebody to play Ambujutsu with, so.
He cheats.
That was the missing scene, the Ambujutsu at the Riker's house. Yeah.
Definitely. Right, yeah. So there's a Sherman's March thing that was one of the last major pushes made against the Confederacy. And Sherman was what was termed at the time a radical Republican, and that's the term that historians still use. That has nothing to do with the modern party in American politics, by the way. But he believed that the Southern aristocracy should be completely broken and that all of their land and wealth should be redistributed to the former slaves. So when he was going through and burning, he was hoping to create a start from scratch. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that there's connections there, but that's the Thaddeus Riker connection. So
okay. Yeah. I didn't know we would be talking about General Sherman.
I didn't know either until I went and looked up Thaddeus Riker.
That's cool.
There's going to be a test at the end of the season, Justin.
If it has to do with American history, I'll probably do well.
I yeah.
One of my better subjects.
And that's
okay,
it for that.
Okay, so excellent. Thus ends Chrissy's History Corner. Yeah. Okay, so thank you. Really appreciate that. Look forward to what you bring out every week. All right.
Thank you.
So, final thoughts?
I'm spent. I'm done. I'm done pitching.
That's what you say every time, and I still ask you for your final thoughts. Chrissy?
I can't think of anything else other than if anybody at CBS Paramount is listening, I want that Picard, or excuse me, I want that Riker Troy on the Titan show. After Pike,
yeah,
do Pike first, and then we'll do this.
I really did love this episode. Like, this episode was like, I tweeted out, I'm like, this is like a warm blanket followed by a giant mug of hot chocolate with lots of whipped cream on it. Like, this was, this all was wonderful. And I really, really did love this episode a lot.
Yeah.
So, okay. Glad to hear that. Like, and for me, I know I said at the beginning, I thought this was, you know, one of the top episodes in Star Trek for me. It still is. I know, Brandon, you had some issues with it, but those are things that weren't issues for me or that didn't bother me. I thought it was fantastic and it left me with a really good feeling at the end of it. So just looking forward to where we're going in the last three episodes, if you guys can believe it.
No.
So
it's crazy. 10 more.
20 more.
I know. All right. Well, it's been so much fun talking about the Picard episode Nepenthe, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. To the journey!
Although I love the season finale of season one in Voyager.
Learning curve.
I love that episode personally.
That's not a season finale.
I love the episode. No, it's a standalone episode, but I love it. I'd want to keep that as a standalone episode.
No.
Insane.
I love that episode. What are you talking about?
You can choose two things from that episode that you can keep. Go for it.
Earl Grey.
The powers at Paramount at the time, they wanted it to be left more ambiguous so the audience were...
But it's not all that ambiguous, I think.
Right, well, you were questioning it.
Because there would have to... But there would have there would have to coincidentally be something that happened to cause it to discharge and transport without Data doing that. That seems unlikely.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
You should buy yourself another one and do that. Like the little circle that goes around the top of the saucer section.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'll look
and maybe a little bit, on the nacelles as well. You know, just accents.
Or you could just get like a sticker of Jeffrey Chrome's as Shran and then stick it on the underside of it, maybe.
Oh, just a big Shran face on the underside of the ship. I like
that. Or kind of stylized, like how the Second World War bombers would have the pet pinup girl painted on the side.
Shran the pinup girl?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I got to say about your thing about Vasquez Rocks. I mean, I'm disappointed that it's actually supposed to be Vasquez Rocks.
Oh.
Yeah, because that means that we're not going to see Lazarus.
Okay. Yeah. I know you love the alternative factor, but
I love the alternative
probably not a connection with Picard.
They all can still exist.
I was holding out hope, you know. I was holding out hope. So you never know.
There's lots of rocks. He could be on the other side.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button at Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or on the desktop Apple Podcast app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others to find the show. And we actually do have another new review, which I'll just pull up here. So this one comes all the way from Germany. And it says, thanks a lot, LLAP. And the review is tagged great and gives us 5 stars. This is from TauTau04. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Appreciate it. We love to get reviews from all over the world.
It's weird when I find out other people in other countries are listening to me.
They really are.
It's crazy.
Right. And if you're not an Apple user like me, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and YouTube. I personally like Pocket Casts, so unpaid plug for that. And in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
And before I continue, this is for listener Ruby Elizabeth and her cat, Natima, because Brandon did a post on... You did on different parts of social media of like us as cats.
Oh,
and
yes.
You're the one that's like making all the ruckus with your tongue hanging out. And Chrissy and I are just kind of... So here you go, Ruby Elizabeth and your cat and a team. I said I would say this on the podcast, so I'm saying it now. Meow, 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 meow. Meow, 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 meow. So that is my little interpretation. If I were a cat, how I'd podcast.
I love it.
Okay.
Love
it. So hopefully she heard that, and other people that heard that are just wondering what the heck is going on.
Just go to Brandon's Twitter feed. It's good.
Be sure to check out our Picard coverage throughout the week. Commentary will be available as tracks on the line, feedback will be discussed on postcards on the line, and you can catch the full analysis right here on the main show. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the line and the Trek FM master feed.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where Christopher Littlefield will collect your feedback for postcards on the line. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
Or if you'd prefer to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose send to a show and select the line, and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not looking up everything on Memory Alpha?
God, I do look up a lot of stuff, don't I?
Is there any entries for diarrhea on Memory Alpha?
Possibly. I don't know. The Final Frontier. Mm-hmm. We'll get that the next episode. No. No, let's not have that graphic. What am I supposed to be saying? Oh, yes, you can find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting Earl Grey. That's our dedicated Star Trek The Next Generation podcast where we do not talk about vomiting or diarrhea ever, I think.
You're missing out, buddy. Time
not talking about that every week with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan. You can also find me on Twitter at TrekFan4747 where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
With your co-host, so Brandon, Amy, that we're not totally jealous of for being on the Star Trek cruise right now as we speak.
Yes.
I know. I know. That cruise looks so good. Very jealous. Mm-hmm. So, Brandon, where can people contact you when you're not having a slice of pizza with extra bunnicorn sausage?
I love bunnicorn sausage. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me here in the Babel Conference as well, poking my head up every once in a while. You can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network as well as in our own independent feed with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which is all about Hitchcock's films. And we go through them in chronological order. Also, Franchise Fatigue with my good friend Zach Moore. And we have a lot of fun over there talking about movies, remakes, and sequels. So be sure to check that out. Chrissy, where can people find you when you're not trying to reactivate the Borg Queen chamber?
Oh.
Whatchamacallit?
Yeah. That would be very interesting.
All hail Chrissy, Borg Queen next week. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in addition to here on the line, of course, people can find me in the Babel Conference on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's TheGoddessLivia. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page my fellow historian partner and I run, History with the Zilagis. And that's spelled S-Z-I-L-A-G-Y-I-S. And where there is where we post about our historical research, including my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM, that's patreon.com/TrekFM, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us. We hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find the details at patreon.com/TrekFM.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. And you can always volunteer to become an associate producer of our show. You know, just
$25 a month or more.
Yeah. We'll see your name
at patreon.com/TrekFM.
We love it. Wait. Before you go, I just want to give you this broken iPod. You just have to pretend it's not broken.
Okay. It looks pretty. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's good.
What a wonderful gift, a broken compass.
Oh.
It has symbolic meaning. Yeah. Man, you say you love this episode, but you're really picking on it. So join us next time for another 2-hour-plus episode of The Line, where we'll talk about the 8th Picard episode, Broken Pieces.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness, that is life.
They seem to be carrying more baggage than all of you ever did, but then, I'm not the one to talk.
Shields up!
Perimeter scan to maximum.